This episode of Walter Edgar's Journal is an encore of a previously broadcast program.
Welcome to Walter Edgar's Journal. With me in the SCANA studio today is Professor Robert Brinkmeyer of the University of South Carolina. He holds two distinguished professorships, all related to the American South, and he is director of the Institute for Southern Studies. And today we're going to talk about Harper Lee's new book, and its southernness and its reception. And so, first of all, Bob, welcome back to the Journal.
Thank you very much, Walter. It's really nice to be here.
Well, Harper Lee's new book, Go Set a Watchman, has been released, somewhat controversial, and we'll talk about that. But it's, in essence, a prequel to her most famous book, really her only novel, To Kill a Mockingbird. And while it's something of a cliche that everybody's read To Kill a Mockingbird, everybody's seen the movie, well, not everybody really and truly has. So if we could just spend a couple of minutes talking about, you know, a synopsis of the plot to Kill a Mockingbird and why that in turn makes Go Set a Watchman so controversial.
To Kill a Mockingbird, it focuses in on some children that are growing up in a small town in Alabama, and particularly one scout and her brother and their father, Atticus Finch, who's become an icon really in the American imaginary about an honorable man standing up to a racist system and defending. He's a lawyer. He defends a black man who's been accused of rape, and he clearly in the courtroom scene does a marvelous job, and even though the jury should not convict, of course, in the 1930s, with an all-white jury, the black man is convicted. The story suggests how one man, Atticus Finch, can stand up to the system and perhaps have a moving effect that will impact slowly the way that the South's racist system might be changed. It's a story of heroism. That's the basic plot that most people think of To Kill a Mockingbird. I think it's much more complicated than that, and we can talk about that if you'd like some, particularly in light of Go Set a Watchman. I think that most people actually, when they think of To Kill a Mockingbird, think of the movie. I think the movie is actually with Atticus Finch, played by Gregory Peck, is the way that most people think. And Gregory Peck, he altered the shape of the book and made more emphasis on Atticus. The novel itself pays more attention to the children. The children are their story in growing up in the South, and the contradictions that they see in the Southern racist system is much more a part of the book than the film.
That's a very good representation. You talk about the 1930s, and people say, wait a minute, was it the 30s? Yes, for To Kill a Mockingbird it was, because Go Set a Watchman is set in the 1950s.
That's right.
And Scout, the little tomboy girl, has grown up. She's gone to New York, and she's coming back home. And she's got some problems with the world that she sees. She's, as her uncle and her would-be beau and her father talk about, you've spent too much time with those Yankees.
Yeah, that's right. She comes back, and she's both an insider and an outsider, because she comes back and she deeply appreciates the town that she lives in, but at the same time, she has this kind of a northern perspective at the same time. So she's an insider outsider, and this is not an unusual situation in Southern literature. You frequently have the insider who grew up in the South, who leaves the South for a while and then comes back home. So the novel starts off very traditionally in that sense. And I think that for me, what's interesting is that Scout, or Jean Louise as she's known in Go Set a Watchman, becomes much more of an insider as the novel progresses, even though she believes she's not really an insider. So that's kind of an unusual twist to the novel, I think.
I must say that I found the opening passages almost lyrical as she's riding the train and it comes into Alabama. I have been on that particular train. It was the 1960s, but it went through the same landscape, stopping in all the towns. Only when, I mean, in those days, the trains would stop when you were getting off at a particular place, whether it was a regular stop or not, once you left Montgomery and headed south to Mobile. That's a world that most people have no experience with. And one of the things that I have noticed in those folks who have reviewed the book really don't understand the 1950s American South, whether they're dealing with African Americans or they're dealing with white Southerners. Go Set a Watchman is not To Kill a Mockingbird.
No, it's not. It's very easy for somebody sitting here in 2015 to go back to a novel that's set in the 1930s or the 1950s and be very judgmental about, well, why don't you see race the same way that I see it today in 2015? And I think that some of the reviews that you're referring to, they're by people that aren't grounded really in Southern literature or Southern culture and make hasty decisions about the complicated cultural dynamics that are at work in a novel, even though it's not always on the surface. I mean, if you know, as you've just been talking about, if you know the dynamics of a small Alabama town, you know that there's a lot going on that is not, that an outsider would completely miss and be completely judgmental about.
It's interesting to look at the press, and of course the hype surrounding this book was incredible. Part of your life has been as a literary historian. Do you buy the story about this manuscript suddenly just appearing out of a lockbox?
Well, you know, I'm not an expert in that. I think from all that I've read, this seems to be the first draft that Harper Lee wrote during the 1950s when she was living in New York City. The working title for To Kill a Mockingbird was Go Set a Watchman, and so we know that. We also know that her editors in New York, when they first saw the manuscript of Go Set a Watchman, they told her to go back and revise it, and she got a very strong editorial guidance. Most likely, the manuscript that we now have published as her second novel was the first run-through of To Kill a Mockingbird, which she apparently abandoned and, for whatever reason, set it aside without thinking of publishing it. The machinations that went on to get this published, I can only imagine, and I don't even want to speculate. The other theory is, which I don't think the evidence really supports this so much, is that this is a later novel, a manuscript that she wrote after To Kill a Mockingbird. Harper Lee, throughout most of her adult life, said that she always wanted to write what she called the race novel, you know, that would explain Southern racial dynamics. And she never, as far as we know, she never created that manuscript, although this may be it. I don't think that's the case, though.
Well, it's interesting when you talk about this could, you know, the first draft, and I would agree with you. I think that's, I buy that story, because what do you tell writers? Write about something you know. Well, she was a young Southern woman in New York who does go back home to Monroeville. It's a part of Alabama I know very well. My maternal grandfather was from Monroeville. And it's like the small town South everywhere. It could be Rock Hill. It could be Tunica, Mississippi. It could be, you know, the places that you knew growing up in North Carolina. And part of that complicated situation in the 1950s, race relations, how the white community is going to deal with the beginnings of civil rights activism, particularly the better sort, as Harper Lee basically describes them, is a world that really isn't in To Kill a Mockingbird.
No, it's really not. I mean, To Kill a Mockingbird is set in the 1930s, and there's very little reference to the outside world, outside of the town that it's taking place in. The Scottsboro Boys trials had taken place a few years before the novel is set, but that kind of lingers, if you know, that's in the background, but it's not expressed in the story. So that's one of the reasons that To Kill a Mockingbird lacks the cultural history of civil rights and activism that you find in Go Set a Watchman. And I think that's one reason that To Kill a Mockingbird works so well, particularly in high school and literature classes, because people pay attention to the human elements without thinking about the political activities that are going on in the background, which makes for more complicated discussions. The focus becomes on a good man trying to do the right thing, meaning Atticus in this trial, and Tom Robinson suffering because of the system, but the focus is really on, you know, the heroic man standing up.
Well, Go Set a Watchman has set people on to Kill a Mockingbird, so to speak, but even 10 or 12 years ago, there were critics, not necessarily literary critics, but there were, for example, legal historians saying, well, Atticus Finch could have done this, he could have done that, he should have done that, without any concept of the reality of the world in which Atticus Finch was operating. And you might remember, it's been about 6 years ago, we did Take on the South series for SCETV here, and we had a debate on what was the great Southern novel. And our friend Noel Polk from Mississippi put forward one of Faulkner's works. And Professor Trudier Harris, distinguished professor then at Chapel Hill, said without question it was To Kill a Mockingbird. And that shocked a lot of people because you had not only she distinguished professor, she's not only African-American, but been very active in social causes, and she picked To Kill a Mockingbird. And there was one telling comment as they exchanged after they made their initial positions. I've forgotten what Noel was talking about. Well, Faulkner won the Nobel Prize, and her comment was, To Kill a Mockingbird has never been out of print.
That's right. I think regarding the idea of Atticus in To Kill a Mockingbird and people attacking him, I think that the response is that response. There is some validity to it if you see Atticus, as he primarily comes off in the film and not so much in the novel, as some type of social activist. You know, he's a good man, but he's not trying to change the system. So that in this day and age, people say, yes, he should have done more. But in the 1930s, he was doing a lot just by trying to make the system work fairly. Atticus wants everybody to have a fair trial and to be equal under the law in terms of when they're in the courtroom. But Atticus does not question the segregated system in the sense of, you know, he's not a civil rights activist at all. And that, I think, in this day and age, so he's open to attack from that perspective. But I think that when you make that judgment, and I think, you know, drawing on what you're saying, you're ignoring the dynamics and the culture of the 1930s small town South.
Well, just for example, in South Carolina in the 1950s, and I think this might be a good time to explain, Atticus in Go Set a Watchman is a member of the Citizens Councils.
That's right.
And people don't understand what the Citizens Councils were. Even in the review, and I'm talking about one of the longer reviews, which was in The New Yorker, refers to the Citizens Council as marginally respectable citizens councils, a kind of less covert version of the Klan. Yes and no. They opposed desegregation, but these were the, quote, respectable people. But it's amazing the violence that took place in the South because respectable people didn't stand up in the 1950s. There was a book published in South Carolina in the 1950s called South Carolinians Speak, and they were all churchmen and women saying basically the Supreme Court's made its decision, we need to move forward. This is regarding the Supreme Court decision on school desegregation. And a church woman in Rock Hill had her home bombed. Nobody came out, no solution. But she had overstepped what was then considered the bounds of propriety in Southern society.
Well, I think that most people, when they pick up Go Set a Watchman, would want Atticus to be one of those people like that woman who says, okay, the Supreme Court has spoken. Because they see, they remember him from To Kill a Mockingbird as following the law of, in the courtroom, Tom Robinson deserves a fair trial. Whatever the system is on the streets, he deserves a fair trial. So that when we get to Go Set a Watchman in the 1950s, I think most readers would expect Atticus to say the law is spoken. And so they're surprised when it becomes, for him, not an issue of the racist system and segregation. It becomes the Southern way of life versus the Northern way of life and the federal government telling us what to do. I think that's the surprise that that most readers come to.
Well, and when he actually comes out is, again, he's defending somebody, a black man who's accused of a crime, but he does it not so that he is necessarily going to get a fair trial. It's to keep one of those civil rights lawyers from coming in and stirring up trouble.
That's right, and that's very disturbing. I mean, this is not the Atticus Finch that we see in, I mean, it is the same Atticus Finch, I think. I think you could say there are parallels, but we're surprised at that. I mean, his motives seem much more complicated than they are in To Kill a Mockingbird. This is a more troubling. He's also a former member of the Klan, which, you know, if you look at the chronology, he would have been in the Klan before the events of To Kill a Mockingbird. So, which makes you go back and think, okay, well, what was going on in To Kill a Mockingbird then? If here's a former Klan's member who was defending a black man in court so vigorously. It really makes for a much more complicated story. I mean, it's like, I think we're going to be pondering this for a long time. You know, how and why is Atticus Finch? What drives this incredibly complicated man? And do we think that he's totally inconsistent or not? And I don't think he is totally inconsistent. I think he's a human being, and I think that he is under a lot of pressures that he sometimes recognizes and sometimes doesn't to maintain kind of a white solidarity in this small southern town.
Well, the critic Adam Gopnik, he's been with The New Yorker for years, does have some nice things to say about the novel after he says, well, if Mockingbird did not exist, this book would never have been published. Maybe yes, maybe no, but that's the way he starts off his review. But then he moves into the sense of place that he recognizes that Harper Lee has captured Macomb, has made this wonderful place. In fact, he said, magically alive throughout most of the novel. And I would agree, even though he tries to explain away the fact that he didn't have a Southern background. He said, there is a little set piece about the arrival of a train at a flag stop that makes one feel nostalgic for one's Southern childhood, even if one had never had a Southern childhood. Mm. Now, he caught that, but when it comes to the interaction of the black and white characters in the book, he misses a lot, quite frankly.
Yeah, we were talking about this ourselves even before the show. There's a scene where Jean-Louise, or Scout, goes out to talk to Calpurnia because her grandson has been arrested.
Calpurnia was her nursemaid or her nanny growing up.
That's right.
Basically raised her in the Southern cliche. And, of course, her father was a widower.
That's right. And so Calpurnia really was the surrogate mother, I mean, and very close. And so she goes out to talk to Calpurnia, and Calpurnia looks at her and says to her, what have you done to us? And this is shocking to Scout or Jean-Louise as an adult, because she's being indicted here. and Calpurnia will not respond. She's breaking down, and then Scout says, "You loved us, right?" Or something to that effect. Yeah. You love us.
I've got that passage.
Okay, because, you want to do the passage.
Yeah,
all right.
I'm going to do the passage because it really is, it's a very powerful part of the book.
I think it's the most powerful scene in the whole book.
And, all right, Scout, who is now Miss Jean Louise, and she walks in the door. She's always been Scout, but all of the local black community around this family have gathered, and she senses from the minute she gets out of her car that things are different. Those who speak to her call her Miss Jean Louise. She's reached that part as a Southern woman. She's past the point where she could be called Scout by her first name. Now, Calpurnia is still Cal, as she calls her. She calls this older woman by her first name. And she goes in to see her. "Cal," she cried, "Cal, Cal, Cal, what are you doing to me?" Because Calpurnia won't speak to her. "What's the matter? I'm your baby. Have you forgotten me? Why are you shutting me out? What are you doing to me?" Calpurnia lifted her hands and brought them down softly on the arms of the rocker. Her face was a million tiny wrinkles, and her eyes were dim behind thick lenses. "What are you all doing to us?" she said. And then Scout goes, "Did you hate us?" And Calpurnia shakes her head no. And the reviewer said it would have been far stronger had Calpurnia said, "Yes, I hated you." This is where I think the nuances of white and black interactions. Scout knew, yeah, she shook her head, didn't hate her, but she didn't say, "I loved you." She did say, "What are you all doing to us?"
I think, and that's the indictment. So Calpurnia has clearly both, I think, loves Scout, but hates her too. And I don't mean hate in some personal way, but Calpurnia is indicting Scout there, and the reviewer you're talking about completely misses it. So that Calpurnia has lived a double life that most blacks have been forced to live. Acting one way in front of white people, another way their true feelings. And this comes out in this is the most powerful scene in the novel, I think. And the fact that Calpurnia does not say, "Yes, I hated you," or anything like that. It's more powerful that she doesn't say it. It's all in the nuance. It's all in that the cultural dynamics that Southerners know about. They can read it. You don't have to vocalize everything. You can read body language, you can read pauses, you can read things that are left out.
To me, that scene, that story, and the interaction throughout it, it's not a great novel, but I think it's something, as I read it and Neela read it, and then we would read passages back and forth and we could relate. I mean, growing up white in the South in the 40s and 50s was blacks and whites. It was a separate world. And folks say, "Well, why didn't you know this or why didn't you know that?" Maybe we did, maybe we didn't.
Yeah, and I mean, so it's all in this novel, and I think that it's hard to figure out, I think. It's hard to know what to do with the novel in the sense of brother Uncle Jack, who gives a Southern apologia about the Civil War and Reconstruction. So there's a lot about white solidarity and how people tell stories to convince themselves of that, of their position. So there are a lot of ways to read this. There's the way you're reading it, which I think, you know, really is saying that the novel really captures the white Southern town. But when you've got, see, here's the problem. When you've got To Kill a Mockingbird in the background, everybody's coming to this novel having read To Kill a Mockingbird. You're thrown for a loop. You're just thrown for a loop because we've been taught that Atticus Finch is one of American's heroes. And then you get into this novel, he's a lot more complicated and a lot less simplistically a hero. And so in tandem, the two novels are really complicated and troubling, I think.
Bob, we need to pause for a moment and let our listeners know that this is Walter Edgar's Journal, and I'm talking with Professor Bob Brinkmeyer of USC about Harper Lee's Go Set a Watchman. Bob, when you and I were talking earlier, and we were using the we and growing up reading this and how we felt about now Go Set a Watchman, the question is, how would persons of color view this? Trudier Harris thought To Kill a Mockingbird was absolutely, as she said, in her opinion, it was the great Southern novel. But this turns, Go Set a Watchman turns this all on its head.
Well, it certainly makes Atticus's position much more complicated. And what's happened, I think, in Go Set a Watchman is that we're no longer in the world of To Kill a Mockingbird. And I mean not just the 1930s, we're in the 1950s, but we're in a world that is a southern town that is no longer existing in a vacuum, a historical vacuum, that there are now outside influences that are changing this culture. And so we're seeing this small southern town under a lot of stress. And then Harper Lee makes that clear in the book. It's not just in terms of political changes in terms of the federal government mandating the end to a segregated school system, but a lot is made in the novel about how with World War II, people coming back, the transformation of the town is changing. And so what we get in this book is a much more rich depiction of people living in times of cultural change and the stresses and strains that are undergoing that culture and how individuals are responding to them. So it brings out a side to Atticus who is resisting change that we don't really see in To Kill a Mockingbird, where history, we're almost, it's not a fairy tale, don't get me wrong, but I'm saying that we don't have a town that is facing tremendous change.
No, it's in the time capsule.
That's right. And so it's a very different world, and so people are responding very differently, and it's in times of stress, people maybe reveal themselves more truthfully than they do when everybody is comfortable in living their everyday lives.
Well, the other scene that grabbed me besides the one we've already talked about with Cal Perney was when Scout Jean Louise goes to the meeting in the courthouse. She sneaks into the courthouse into, interestingly, the black balcony to listen to the White Citizens Council's meeting going on. And they brought in an outsider who is a Klansman and who spouts all this vicious racist rhetoric. And there's her father sitting there. There's her old beau who's trying to rekindle a romance. The other respectable people in town. And she has she can't believe what she's hearing. And then she confronts her father. And that's a fairly emotional scene, too.
Yeah, it's very emotional. I mean, her response after she witnesses the Citizens Council meeting, it's visceral. I mean, she vomits, if I remember right. I mean, as she walks in a town, she feels like she's in another world. It's almost like she thinks that what is this secret dark world that this town is that I've just been looking at the calm, placid surface. And so when she meets Atticus, and then also a very powerful conversation with Uncle Jack. I mean, this is a highlight of the book. And she even says at one point, he looked the same way as he did the day before. She almost said, I was expecting a figure like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. It's a very powerful scene. And it's what I really like about that scene is that Atticus is an expert lawyer in this scene. It's almost like she he brings her under cross-examination, so that on the one hand, she is trying to find out what Atticus believes. How could he be a part of the Citizens Council, while he is expertly kind of dissecting and leading her through kind of a cross-examination of her own views. So it's an expert scene where we get both people kind of revealing their skills and their beliefs.
And there's more than a touch of class difference here in the white community, which is not evident in To Kill a Mockingbird. You know, like, Daddy, how could you possibly invite this, I think she even used the word white trash. If she didn't, that's the
implication.
Well, you know, we, the Citizens Council, let him talk and what have you, but that's not the way we behave. I mean, Atticus tries to draw the distance, but of course, as the respectable folks let those others talk, that talk led to violence. It led across the South. It led to particularly economic pressure on African Americans participating in the civil rights movement and whites who supported him, and as I mentioned earlier, Obama and Raquel.
That's right. This is not Atticus's finest moment, and I don't even know really what Harper Lee is expecting us to feel towards Atticus at this point. I mean, I think it's a deeply troubling scene, because if you look at the rhetoric that even Atticus uses in this conversation, I mean, he says things like, well, do you want black children to go to school with white children? Do you want blacks voting so that we have blacks running this town? And he seems quite serious about all this. It's not just a rhetorical move. And the other thing that, you know, he downplays his own racism or racist beliefs in terms of kind of displacing it on this outside speaker. But don't forget that the book, the pamphlet that Jean Louise finds in the living room, that in the home, in Atticus's home, is one of these horrible racist pamphlets that were circulating in the South in the 1940s and 1950s, with a picture of a black depicted as a cannibal. And so, hey, this is what Atticus is reading at night. And I don't think he's studying it to understand the opposition. I think this is, for some reason, he's caught up into this.
It's not just Atticus that her image of him is shattered, but her uncle, who's always been sort of an intellectual guide as well, is, I mean, that's even an even worse confrontation.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think that Atticus and her uncle are working in as a team. I mean, I think they've almost figured out what they need to do. And oddly enough, I think most people have looked at Go Set a Watchman and paid most of their attention to Atticus and Uncle Jack, like at their positions. How could these good Southern men, white Southern men, actually be part of Citizen Council and things like that? But what I'm most interested in the novel, and I think I'm surprised that more people haven't talked about this, is the way that Jean Louise, after these two long conversations with Uncle Jack and Atticus, is essentially won over to their position, so that we get Uncle Jack and Atticus leading her through this complicated cross-examination where her true feelings emerge, so that by the end of the novel, she is no longer railing about the beliefs of Uncle Jack and Atticus, but actually seems to be happily reconciled with them and ready to take up their positions. This I find very surprising. I would have thought that given her and that Jean Louise's indictment of the Citizens Council and the Klan during the novel, she would have carried that through in the end. But this is kind of a novel that ends fairly happily with Jean Louise looking to Atticus and Uncle Jack for advice about what to believe in. And I think that comes out really clearly when she asks Uncle Jack, is she going to marry this beau that he has been trying to win her? And Uncle Jack says, no, you're not, because he's not the right sort for you. And she says, yes, okay. She accepts that.
Even though he is her father's law partner.
That's right. You know, the novel opens with this question about what's going to happen with my love relationship. She has to figure that out. And in the end, she lets Uncle Jack decide for her that she would be marrying below her if she went with her beau.
Yes, and that is a part of small-town Southern life. That's why I said class comes into this novel that's not in the only real outsider in To Kill a Mockingbird is Boo.
Well, you know, there are the Cunninghams, the people that the little boy that comes to dinner in To Kill a Mockingbird, who pours the syrup over all his food. So you do see some class issues, and they're the, you know, in To Kill a Mockingbird, you know, when we have the sense that it's the poor whites that want to lynch Tom Robinson that night that Atticus is sitting outside the jail. So the class is kind of lurks in To Kill a Mockingbird, but it's foregrounded more in Go Set a Watchman. Go Set a Watchman is much more socially engaged in terms of dealing with the issues.
You have to wonder how autobiographical Go Set a Watchman really is.
That's right. And also, I think everybody suggests that Atticus Finch was a representation of, maybe not exactly, but certainly Harper Lee was drawing upon her father for that. So yes, this gives you a more complicated picture of her father. Certainly. I wouldn't be surprised, we were talking earlier about the origins of the novel. I wouldn't be surprised if the editors, when they read, if this really is the first draft of To Kill a Mockingbird, I wouldn't be surprised if the editors read all of this, the stuff about the Citizens Council and the Supreme Court decision and said, this isn't going to work. You know, you want to set this in a scene, a situation where it is not so foregrounded on specific issues of a day. You know, you don't date it so much. Set it more in a time period where we can have a human drama without the political drama.
Well, I mean, they wouldn't want to have wanted a book. I mean, today, books looking at the 50s in the South, whether they're novels or even history, are much more open about using phrases, words, and explaining what was going on instead of glossing it over. In the 50s, that would not have been marketable.
Yeah, it would have been very difficult to market. I mean, I really think it would have been difficult. So the editors probably had a strong hand in making this book never see the light of day. And then, you know, how many ever years later? What is it, 60 years later, 50 years later? Now the editors probably had a strong say to bring it, bring it out.
Okay. Well, Bob, as someone who teaches Southern literature, what are you going to do with To Kill a Mockingbird and Go Set a Watchman?
I would love to actually teach them together, because I think it gives you, by reading these two novels together, it forces you to look at a much more complicated cultural and racial situation than you get in just To Kill a Mockingbird, so that it forces you to think about the type of training white children underwent when they were growing up, to believe in certain ways. What were their elders? What were their motives? What did they believe in? I think that we get, together, we get a really, really rich depiction of racial dynamics and the pressures for white solidarity that you don't get if you only stick to Kill a Mockingbird. Despite the fact that I don't think Go Set a Watchman is a great novel, but it is unbelievably interesting culturally and intellectually and historically.
Is To Kill a Mockingbird a great novel?
You know, I think To Kill a Mockingbird is much more complicated than it's given credit for, and that, I mean, a lot of people see it as a young adult book, and I think that To Kill a Mockingbird is really, really more rich than it's generally speaking seen as. And I think that the stories, particularly of the children and the way that they see the inconsistencies and problems in the system, they're the ones that really question the system. I said earlier that Atticus wants a fair trial in the courtroom, but he never really questions the system of segregation. It's the children who are kind of innocent. They're the ones who are probing and kind of saying, well, why do we do it like this? You know, what do you mean? Who's folks? But, how do we define folks? And they're, so it's really, really interesting. And so I think that people should continue reading To Kill a Mockingbird, but don't just pay attention to Atticus. Pay attention to the children, too.
In many ways, Maycomb or Monrovia, it's the children's world more than it is in both books.
Maybe. I think that definitely in To Kill a Mockingbird, I think that what you're missing in the type of thing that you get in To Kill a Mockingbird, where the children are questioning the system because they're seeing it through childlike eyes. In the flashbacks that occur in Ghost at a Watchman, Scout is not really questioning what's going on around her. She's trying to fit in. I mean, she's trying to wonder, what dress should I wear to the prom? I mean, they're issues of childhood, and they're very funny, and they're well done, but she is not in Ghost at a Watchman wondering about racial dynamics or outsiders. There's no Boo Radleys running around. It's the problem of a tomboy who's now suddenly becoming a young woman, and the difficulties that she faces in terms of her identity as a woman, but not really focusing in on her identity as a woman in a white culture that is fundamentally has a systematic racist system. I mean, you don't get that.
Well, but you do get a Southern white world in which there is a white caste system.
Absolutely.
One of her aunts decides she has to come to a tea.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, I can't remember the aunt's name, but she, you know, I'll use a phrase that I used when I was growing up. She's a trip. I mean, she has the rules and regulations that every young Southern woman must live by, and she's in both novels. So we get her, we see her, the iron fist that she tries to keep Scout under. So you're absolutely right. So in that regard, the dynamics are the same. I just don't think there are some elements, cultural dynamics, that are missing in those flashbacks that you in Ghost at a Watchman that are foregrounded in To Kill a Mockingbird. And see, that's why it's so much fun to read the two novels together, because you're saying, okay, so what is she probing in To Kill a Mockingbird that she's leaving out in Ghost at a Watchman, or vice versa? I mean, we're still in a small Southern town. What's going on? What's changing? What is she probing here but ignoring here?
You'd almost wish for a third novel, Calpurnia, or Calpurnia's story.
Oh, that would be wonderful. And I mean, you know, to have kind of a trilogy from that perspective, I think that would be wonderful. That would be wonderful.
The black story is not told in these books until you have that scene at the end of Ghost at a Watchman. That's the first time you really have any idea what the black community in the 1950s is thinking.
I know, and what is so powerful about that scene is how little is actually said, but how much is going on in that scene. That scene is just absolutely marvelous. I mean, that scene shows, if this is her first draft, that shows the real power of Harper Lee's writing. I mean, and you know, you're absolutely right. The New York Reviewer completely misses it.
Bob, as someone who's written and you've edited anthologies, you've written you know, essays about Southern writers. How does this Ghost at a Watchman affect Harper Lee's legacy?
Wow, that's going to be hard to predict. I mean, it's controversial already, right? And
yeah.
I don't know. I just don't know. And I think part of the problem, you know, if she had brought this novel out like 5 years after To Kill a Mockingbird or something like that, where we knew that she wanted it published, and then it would be, you could really look at saying, okay, what was she doing? You know, how is she changing as a writer? But we don't even know, as we've been talking about, where this novel appears in, you know, in terms of her writing career. If this is just her first draft and she never wanted it published, I don't think we should pay much attention to it other than, I mean, in terms of defining her legacy, I think it's a very interesting novel to teach.
Yeah.
What do you think? I just don't know what to say about that.
I don't know, and I have not chatted really with Trudy or Harris, who still thinks To Kill a Mockingbird was the most influential, and that was the term that used, not the best,
right,
but the most influential Southern novel.
And I think that's absolutely the case. I mean, more people know this, the story, even if they haven't read the book, they've seen the novel, I mean, they've seen the film, and it's, that novel has just defined so much about Southern race and Americans' conceptions of race, not just Southerners' conceptions of race, but this book is taught all over America.
Well, as you said, though, it misses part of the story.
Yeah, it does. And I can guarantee you that the Ghosetta Watchman will not be in the classrooms the way that To Kill a Mockingbird has been.
No, it won't. I mean,
it will be studied, and it'll be studied, but it won't be widely read or widely taught. I mean, I don't know. It's funny. I would love to know what people's responses are. I you know, the everyday people who waited and, you know, were so excited when the book was announced in last February that it was going to be published. What has been the response?
It's been selling very, very, very well. But then you get reactions. I have a friend who names her pets after literary figures. And she had a pet named Atticus, and she was going to change the pet's name because now Atticus was a bad person. I think that's the way some people have reacted because the hero had clay feet.
Yeah, but I find that this is so fascinating because I think it forces people to really think, okay, so who is Atticus Finch? How could he be Atticus Finch in To Kill a Mockingbird, the one that we always identified with Gregory Peck in the film and everything, the noble man? How could he actually have been in the Klan before then and then in the Citizens Council? And I think it forces people to understand how complicated it was to be a white person in the American South.
Well, how could Hugo Black, who was a member of the Klan in Alabama and a politician, become one of the most liberal members of the United States Supreme Court?
Exactly, and exactly. And that's the type of story that these two novels, I think, are going to make people ponder.
Well, and there's this apocryphal story, may be true, out of New Orleans and Judge Minor Wisdom, being in one, who was on the Circuit Court of Appeals that made many of the desegregation decisions, being in one of the very posh private clubs in New Orleans, and a fellow member saying, "Well, what did you do to us today?" And the black bartender, as soon as the person went off, said, "And Judge, what did you do for us today?"
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, that echoes the scene from Ghosetta Watchman, when that's Calpurnia,
yeah,
you know, talking there.
Well, as the cliche that's everywhere around, it's complicated. And it truly is, without being trite, it is a complicated story.
Yes, it is. And so that by itself is going to make it a wonderful book to teach, I think.
Well, Professor Bob Brinkmeyer, distinguished member of the faculty of the University of South Carolina, thanks so much for being with us today on the Journal.
Thank you, Walter. It's been a real pleasure to be here.
This is Walter Edgar, and I hope you enjoyed today's journal. As Professor Brinkmeyer and I said at the conclusion of our conversation, this is a complicated story. The reaction to Go Set a Watchman has been mixed. To many, the hero Atticus Finch of To Kill a Mockingbird had more than clay feet. He had a side that nobody knew about, and that's been upsetting. But at the same time, while Go Set a Watchman might not be a great piece of literature, it does present an American South of the 1950s of what a white middle-class professional and town leader really and truly thought about the growing civil rights movement. And at the same time, in a very powerful part of the novel, it also represents what the black community thought about a very complicated situation. This is Walter Edgar. Join me next week for more of The Journal.
Walter Edgar's Journal is a production of South Carolina Public Radio. The producer and engineer is Alfred Turner. Production of this program is made possible in part by listener contributions to the ETB Endowment of South Carolina.
The views and opinions expressed on Walter Edgar's Journal are not necessarily those of South Carolina Public Radio.